Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is a very special episode. Well, maybe not that special. As I said before the show, maybe 5% more special than normal. But this is episode 100, which means we've done, I think we started with episode 000, which was kind of our like pre-pilot episode. So I guess we've done 101 of these. So really,
no.
We totally missed the celebration. Really, the celebration should have been last week.
Hey. Well, wow. Did we?
But it is apt. It is apt that we be a technology podcast and we started at zero and not one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess today we can just jump right into things and not waste too much time with the formalities of celebrating ourselves. But today we're going to talk a little bit about what Google is going to be doing this month. If you've been following anything that Google's been doing over the last month, you know that they launched the Pixel 4a, which we reviewed and talked about a lot on the show over the last few weeks. Ben had a lot of thoughts. We've had a lot of thoughts in general. Seems like a really good phone. But that's really not the star of the fall show for Google this year. As we kind of expected, Google is planning to launch more devices, and it's not... I guess we can talk a little bit about some, I guess, meta chat about the event itself before we dive into the actual products. But it's not a made by Google event. And that's kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit sad because we've had a made by Google event every year since 2016. And Google's kind of used these annual, for those that don't follow Google super closely and might be a little bit new to this conversation, Google uses these annual events to announce a whole slew of hardware. I mean, I think if you look at other companies like Apple and others, you might see that they kind of group different products together, or maybe in Apple's case, they'll hold an event solely for the iPhone, for example. Maybe a little bit of a sideshow here and there. But in Google's case, they've kind of just been like, this is our hardware team's showcase, and they get one day every year. And obviously, this past couple of years, they had a chance to launch a few little things at Google I.O. too. But that's what made by Google has been, and unfortunately there is no made by Google this year. But what is there, Abner? What are we going to have this year that's not a formal made by Google event?
There is just Launch Night In, which is it's a play on, well, staying in, which everybody's doing right now. The majority of people are doing, and they are the first ones to note that it's not taking place at night. It's taking place at 11 a.m. Pacific, which is actually quite, it's a bit late actually for them. One of the later times they started an event to get into that criminology. But yeah, it's supposed to be 11 to 12 on Wednesday. Yes, Wednesday, September 30th.
Yeah, this is an interesting theme that Google chose to go with. There hasn't really been a theme like this, I don't think, to the previous made by Google events.
No.
And so I don't know, my initial thought with this whole Launch Night In thing, I first saw it when they first sent the invites out, and I thought, this is interesting, because it seemed like, okay, they're well, I don't know, first of all, for those that don't know, the when Google announced this, they were their little FAQ for the event specifically said that there was not going to be a live stream to the public. So for those of us that were in the press, were really confused at first, because for one thing, it seemed like this was an event only for press, and it also seemed like an event that was going to be in the evening somehow, because all of the imagery associated with the invitation and I guess the page for the press to sign up and everything was all themed as like, you know, like a movie night type thing. And then come to find out that not only is it going to be not at night, it's going to be at 11 in the morning. It's also going to be very much available to the public. So although there was a little bit of confusion at first, they quickly updated that FAQ page, and it seems like they're saying now that it will absolutely be live streamed to the public at 11 a.m. on the 30th. So I don't know. Maybe originally was going to be like a little, like a press junket, you know, or something like for just press, and it was going to actually be in the evening. But I mean, as Google does very often, it's they may have changed their mind at the last minute, or maybe this was the plan all the whole time, and Google just is very confusingly marketing this.
Yeah. So with this not being made by Google 2020, I feel like they have to come with a theme every year, like the beauty of made by Google. The year was that that's it. There's you don't have to be like Apple and theme every single event. So
yeah, I didn't really think about it. I mean, Apple does they theme things, but I don't know if they've themed something to this degree, which is like they're trying to. It seemed like this they were trying to create some kind of faux movie night. But with Apple, it's usually just like I don't know. What the recent event was Time Flies, which kind of I think it was kind of a nod to the fact that we all feel like in COVID that time is, you know, like we're all in a time capsule. Maybe a little bit of a nod to the watch and a nod to the iPad Air name. I don't know. There's a few little things that all kind of could fit there. But the event itself wasn't really, it didn't really have like an overarching theme, so to speak. It was just,
yeah, but I,
a tagline,
that's a better word for it. But with Google's, it does feel like a theme, don't you think? We're going to get into the products in a second, but I don't know. I clearly see the Chromecast being used to watch movies, speakers for music. And I don't know, maybe the Pixels to take night sights at night outside in your backyard if you have one. So yeah. I don't know. It could be themed.
It's definitely more themed. I mean, you like to use the word whimsy with Google's, with all of Google's marketing stuff. But that's definitely the case here. I mean, for just a little bit more inside baseball, the press that we're signing up for this event, it seems like Google's sending out like a snack pack of like, you know, like movie night snacks type stuff, candy and, you know, hot chocolate or whatever, you know, like it seems like movie night type thing. So yeah, they're definitely going all out on the movie night theme, but it's happening at 11 a.m. So
on a Wednesday, the middle of the week, event should
probably,
be on
probably Thursday. To make sure that the press actually would be at work while during work hours that they'd be doing work rather than trying to encourage further graying the line between what is and isn't work in 2020 for all of us.
That's true. That's considerate. That is somewhat considerate.
Yeah.
But if they
and also having it at a time when it would make sense to have it as a public event.
Yeah. But if they were really bold, they would do it Friday night and have all of us suffer through it.
I feel like they would have like... Maybe Apple would be able to pull that off, no, but I feel like Google would have like 50% attendance if that happened.
No,
especially with the with the degree to which things leak.
No, this would totally be exciting, don't you think? Friday night.
I agree, it would be fun for us, but I just feel like with the degree to which Google things leak and the degree to which
I
don't know, Google's hardware just has not earned the same amount of clout or excitement that Apple has, and so it's like I just feel like they'd have a hard time pulling the mind space, the attention span of journalists.
I mean,
that's neither here nor there.
How about everybody else? What are other people doing on a Friday night now? Nothing. So it's perfect. They've gone all the way, advertised on the top of YouTube, and make it even more fun. But anyways.
Yes, they could have whatever reason they didn't. So anyways, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, what is actually going to be announced at this event. We know what's going to be announced at this event because Google, in staying true to their transparent attitude, which has been, I feel like, definitely tuned down a little bit this year. Maybe not too much. I mean, we could go on a little sidebar here about this really quick, but last year, for those that don't remember, Google just tweeted it out with the Pixel 4, and they tweeted it out early, like as soon as images started surfacing from regulatory bodies or from random supply chain sources, they were just like, "Yeah, this is the Pixel 4," and all of us had to frantically email Google PR and say, "Is it really?" and to which they said, "Yes, of course it was," and it was. And this year it seemed like they didn't they're still being transparent and they're still being realistic about the degree to which things leak, but they're also tuning it down a little bit. I think with the Pixel 4a launch, they were like, yeah, the Pixel 5 and 4a 5G have also kind of leaked already, so we're just going to show you a little silhouette of it and say, yeah, you expect to see this later, it's coming.
And then I remember they detailed motion sense and face unlock.
Detailed them both in blog posts before the event, actually. They're not doing that this year, it doesn't seem like. No.
And again, do they have anything to do that with this year? They kind of don't.
that's a good point. But this year they did that. They kind of just showed off the Pixel 5 and the 4a 5G in that little image at the announcement of the 4a. And then they also right around the time that the Nest Audio, I don't remember which regulatory body it was. Maybe Japanese. I don't know. Japanese equivalent of the FCC, leaked an image or posted an image of the Nest Audio, or at the time we were calling it the Nest, I don't know, we just didn't really know what it was called, the new Nest speaker or whatever. They pretty much showed that device from the most unflattering angle possible, which is, it tends to be the case with all these FCC or regulatory leaks. And that day Google emailed a lot of press outlets and was like, yeah, here's the device. And so we know, I mean, from Google itself, from first party Google, you know, literally hardware PR, we know what the Pixel 5 looks like, broadly speaking. We know what the Pixel 4a 5G looks like, broadly speaking. We know what the Nest Audio looks like, broadly speaking. And because of leaks, we know what the Chromecast dongle thingy looks like. So it doesn't really seem like there's any surprises. Do you want to take a little time right here and kind of go one by one and dive into what we know about all of these products and
absolutely,
I guess, what we expect? What should we start with?
I think we should do the phones. The people are waiting for the next phone, maybe.
All right, okay. Let's do it. Pixel 5. So, Pixel 4a 5G. Pixel let's 5. Start there.
Okay, Pixel 4a 5G. 5G.
We know it's like called... Sorry, go ahead.
Which I would like to remind the internet is 4A in parentheses, 5G, close parentheses. But I don't think anybody's going to follow that.
Yeah, we'll see how it actually looks when Google announces it.
It's actually on the Google Store page. They added that to the Google Store.
Really? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Already up on the Google Store?
Yeah, the teaser page with the image, it's in parentheses, which, again, I don't think anybody's going to follow that.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's official then. Not that that really matters that much to 99% of people. Pixel 4a 5G seems to be, so that there's been some rumors ever since, I don't know, January of this year, that Google was going to do a Pixel 4a and a Pixel 4a XL, which would make sense in the light of what they did last year with the 3A and 3A XL. And we've seen so many leaks. I have a hard time keeping them all straight in my head because there's so many of them, and Google prototypes and builds so many different devices and they all tend to leak pretty early. But I think we've seen leaks that look like they might be a Pixel 4A XL model. And then we've seen other leaks. I think CAD leaks or renders that seem like there's like a slightly tweaked version of a 4a XL, which we think is the 4a 5G. And so it looks like the 4a 5G for all intents and purposes is basically the 4a XL. It's just not being branded that way. And it obviously adds 5G, whereas if Google had done a 4A and a 4A XL earlier this year, the XL model would not have had 5G. And we know that the current standard 4A that Google already announced doesn't have 5G. So this is a 5G variant of the 4A that also happens to be larger.
Yes.
And other than that, it's basically the same phone as the 4A. So we know what to expect pretty much from the 4A 5G, right?
Yeah. Again, like you were saying, it has a better chip. It has the 765 instead of the 730. And I guess, I'm really mixed on who this phone is for. The smart commentary right now is saying that this is something that carriers wanted badly. They want cheap 5G phones, and Google gave it to them in order to regain their marketing spend, to get a bigger marketing budget this year, and advertising, etc., etc. So yeah, it's going to be a better processor, and it has dual cameras like the Pixel 5, which to me kind of betrays how Google might be aware that if it was literally just a 5G phone, that I don't know why people would select that over the Pixel 4a, the smaller 4a. So I think I would be very like, yes, the Pixel 5 is interesting, it's the phone that most enthusiasts are going to get, but I'm really curious that what a year from now where the 4a 5g is in the market, because I don't basically, do you think people are going to actively seek out the 4A 5G?
I'm confused as to how the lineup makes sense just from a marketing standpoint or just like value proposition standpoint. I'm just confused this year. Like it doesn't follow any of the patterns that Google's used up to now that seemed to make sense, which was really pretty much Google's only launching two phones. And one was a small one for the people that want the small one, and one was the big one for the people that want the big one. With being other, you know, being otherwise effect basically identical. And I guess, I mean, that kind of wasn't the case with the 3 and the 3 XL, because the 3, they kind of had different display. You know, there have been exceptions, and the Pixel 2 and 2 XL were also a little different in their own way, because even though the specs were pretty much the same, the build quality and the manufacturer, the literal manufacturer of the phone was a different company.
Yeah, they have definitely been hardware exceptions, but in the past, Google literally just papered over it. They never acknowledged it.
And their launch lineup every year has been really straightforward, and things started to get a little bit confusing when the 3A came out, because I don't know, it feels like, and I don't want to speak negatively about the Pixel initiative. It seems to be, you know, like I wouldn't say like, oh, the Pixel's been a failure, which is a common narrative that I'm seeing across the internet already. You know, like, oh, well, Google's not launching a $1,000 phone this year, therefore the Pixel is a failure. And I wouldn't go there, but it does seem like there's been a shift in the last year. And it started around the time that Google decided to launch the 3A. Because the 3A was like, wait a minute. So the entire purpose, or the entire way that I, as a journalist or someone trying to objectively cover these phones in comparison to other phones on the market, for the first few generations, I was able to objectively look at the Pixel and say, okay, there's compromises here, but there's enough upsides that are unique to the Pixel line that I could justify it being compared side by side with the top end Samsung phone or the top end iPhone. Particularly speaking in the case of the Pixel, about, you know, the software that enables the camera to be so great. That was one example of something that I could point to and be like, you know, Google may not be major manufacturing, you know, their industrial design may not be up to par with Apple, but you know, their camera, the software of their camera, was, you know, 1 to 2 years ahead of the iPhone. And so it's like, you know, everything had trade-offs and it made sense. With the 3A, Google is kind of realizing, well, we can't just bank on this camera thing forever. Sure. So we got to find some other selling point. We got to find something else that's going to make the Pixel stand out. And it seemed like what their choice, what they decided to do, was basically sell everything about everything that was great about the Pixel, and sell it at half the price.
Yeah. And the key thing about that 3A is what it allowed them to do with the 4, which is, by all intents and purposes, like a high technology phone. They did cameras, they did Siri, they did face unlock. They were very proud of their face unlock being the fastest. Yes. So they really went in two different directions when they decided to do the cheaper phone for everybody else and the high technology phone for enthusiasts. But again, how that panned out is...
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, they have to come to grips with the numbers. And, you know, you and I and most of the tech journalism space, the media, like, we don't really have that much effect on how well these phones sell. I mean, obviously we have more impact on it than most people, but still, like, at the end of the day, the the viability of the Pixel as a consumer device at certain price points or whatever, like that's an economic thing that is far more impacted by the fact that Apple's been selling devices in that category for 10 years and has such a lead and you know, or such a, you know, has so much headway, and Samsung has a huge influence on the market, and there's the duopoly aspect of it where carriers are pretty incentivized to pretty much just sell iPhones and Samsung phones, and because like there's so many different things that affect it so much more than our commentary. I think a lot of people look at things through this lens of like, oh well, the media trashed the Pixel 4 and that's why the Pixel 4 didn't sell well.
Yes,
the Pixel 4 didn't sell well. That's an unfortunate reality that now the Pixel team has to grapple with. I mean, it seems like it didn't sell well. I mean, I think if it sold the best, if it was the best-selling Pixel of the four generations, Google would have been very outward about that.
Yeah,
you know, it would have been mentioned on an earnings call. Yeah, the Pixel 4. Every, you know, someone would have said something along the lines of Pixel has grown every, or the premium Pixel has grown in sales every year, or something like that. And instead, you know, you've kind of heard things that hint more at, the $1,000, the $800 Pixels have struggled over the last couple of years. And we're making up for that by shipping a lot of units of these $300 phones. That's kind of been the tone that you get from Google. And it's also reflective. If you look at, I published a story earlier this year that showed the share of viewers of 9to5 Google, which obviously our site is trafficked by more Pixel users than probably most sites on the entire internet, honestly. I would not be surprised if as a share of a whole, that our site on the entire web gets the, well, maybe not, maybe Google's internal sites, the intranet, outside of the Google intranet, 9to5google.com probably has the biggest share as a percentage of the whole of Pixel phone users versus, you know, other phones. And our own stats show that the Pixel 4 had, you know, comparing, you know, a few months after launch for the four generations, the Pixel 4 had the second lowest adoption, I think, of the four generations. So it was like Pixel 1 and then Pixel 2 was the peak in terms of 9to5 Google viewers using devices as a share of the entirety. And then Pixel 3 was actually down from Pixel 2, and then Pixel 4 was down from Pixel 3. So, you know, we have little hints here and there to show that it doesn't seem like the Pixel 4 turned anything around. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we got off on this tangent. I don't know where this conversation's going, but all of this kind of, you know, coming back to say is, Google is clearly changing something, right? The strategy has changed over the last year.
Yes.
And that became evident with the 3A and the 3A XL. And then it became even more evident this fall with the weird, you know, COVID affected 3 month delayed, 4 month delayed, 4A launch, and now this lineup, which we're expecting, which for those that don't know, is we're expecting the 4A 5G and the Pixel 5 at this event at the end of the month. I don't know. I it's a little early for me. I mean, I don't really have like a, this is what they're doing. It's not obvious to me. It seems like, I don't know. I'll give two sides before I let you chime in. The cynical take is this is Google throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. This is Google. We have to leave that option on the table because they've done that with other things, whether that be hardware or software. They have a long track record of just throwing everything at the wall, A/B testing everything, and just sticking with whatever statistically most viable. So we have to leave that option on the table, unfortunately. The optimistic take is that I think that there's evidence that the Pixel 5 that Google is going to let the Samsungs and Apples take on that $1,000 plus or $800 plus kind of space and say, well, Apple's kind of doing their $700, $600 phone, which is their kind of mainline iPhone 11 phone. And Samsung's kind of doing similar with, and we're just going to stick with that. And we're going to try to compete head to head with that, with the Pixel, with the mainline Pixel, which is the Pixel 5 this year. And we'll see how that goes. And in the meantime, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm optimistic, and I wouldn't be surprised that there is still development. I don't think that all of the technological, like you said, the Pixel 4 is a high tech phone. And it honestly, by far, by such a long degree, is the the most industrial or most well-designed hardware of all of the Pixel phones, in my opinion. And that's just going to go on in the background, and we'll see maybe in the coming years that they are going to give it another shot. Maybe they'll do something weird. Maybe they'll do a foldable. Maybe they'll do, I don't know. I think they'll still do something high tech. It's just TBD. So,
yeah. So as you were saying, it's hard. We can't, it's too early to make the call, to really make the call on what direction Google is doing. Obviously, when they have their press conference, they'll presumably talk about the Pixel 5's existence, reason for existing. But before that, with everything we've seen, it seems like they're trying to do more affordable phones. Like you were saying, they're competing with the mainstream, the mainline stuff. With that said, as we were to wrap up the Pixel 4a, 4a 5G discussion, I do not see where the Pixel 4a 5G fits in with the idea of making a more affordable device. Sure, it's maybe a more affordable 5G device, but who is clamoring for that in terms of the actual customer base? So
yeah,
the 4a 5G would be confusing.
Yeah, I think the most probable theory that, for the reason the 4A 5G exists is because the carriers want to push as many people to upgrade to 5G phones as possible. I mean, all you have to do is watch an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine or whatever on Hulu, and you see all the Verizon and AT&T or whatever, all these 5G commercials. And the line that I just keep hearing from all these commercials is, if you want to use 5G, you have to have a 5G phone. And so it's like all the carriers, they just want to push people to upgrade all their phones. And I think that the 4A 5G exists in a unique place right now where it's going to be a $400-ish phone, $500 phone that supports 5G, which is not, you know, there aren't that many options in that space right now. And so I think there was that rumor from Android Police earlier this year, if you remember. David wrote this story about Verizon no longer carrying Pixels and that the contract was over or the deal had been called off even for this year. So the Pixel 5 wouldn't even launch on Verizon. And hey, we all get things wrong sometimes. But turned out that wasn't true. And I think it's plausible to think that perhaps the deal was on the ice or was on ice. Like, perhaps the deal with keeping the Pixel on Verizon was probably in a rough spot because of the sales of the Pixel 4. Again, this is all presumptuous. Google could tell us on the record right now the Pixel 4 is the best phone or the best-selling Pixel of all the Pixels, and I wouldn't believe it, but they could do that. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe the deal was on ice because of the Pixel 4, and it got rectified because Google agreed to give Verizon a cheapish 5G phone.
Yeah.
I see that as a plausible rationale for the 4A 5G's existence. Obviously, the five is going to support 5G, but that's not going to be unique this year. It's not going to be unique that the $700 phone, however much the Pixel 5 costs, it's not going to be unique that phone supports 5G because it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same for the iPhone. It's going to be the same for a lot of devices. So,
yeah. Speaking of the Pixel 5. It's going to be the perfect in between of the Pixel 4a and the Pixel 4a 5g. The cameras, the bigger one, the body of the smaller one. Speaking of the body, that is actually one of the big major questions that we don't know whether this is going to be a plastic phone or whether it's going to be a metal coated with stuff that makes it feel plasticky. We don't know any of that right now. And it's something that wouldn't, even people that have this phone, they wouldn't be able to know 100% until Google puts it on the spec sheet. So the Pixel 5, we haven't seen colors either, but the rumors are black and green. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But the Pixel 5.
So looking at let's talk about that actually a little bit. What do we think is going to happen with that? I think looking at the picture that Google itself shared, I think I can almost feel the phone in my hand by looking at it. It looks kind of like a similar matte texture to the Pixel 2, the black Pixel 2 back, but maybe a little bit rougher. It looks a little bit more textured. It was the Pixel 2 back. The body was aluminum, but it was painted, right? Like that. Yep. That was.
Yeah.
It seems like, I mean, from what the leaks have suggested, the Pixel 5 is basically going to be, you know, the same system on a chip as the 4A 5G, but it's going to have a lot of extra features that would be more in line with the 4 or the, you know, the premium type stuff, the variety, the wireless charging, the, you know, 90 Hertz display, you know, like little things here and there. Do you think that maybe it's, I mean, if it has wireless charging, it's gotta be plastic, right? Like,
yeah,
it's gotta be plastic and it looks like coated. So maybe it's a coated or textured version of the same plastic they're using for the Pixel 4a. I don't know. It seems weird that you know, a phone as expensive as that would have
the 4a does not feel like a premium phone. You're getting what you're paying for, which is $349. So you mentioned the wireless charging, the better processor, 2 gigs of additional RAM. So on the specs front, yes, this is objectively Google's high-end phone, but the feel, it's going to be curious. And I am not a fan of these textured of these, like those little white speckled dots all over the place. I am not a fan of that. And I don't use the case, so I'll have to experience it firsthand.
Yeah, maybe there's different. I mean, in the case of the Pixel 2, the Panda model had a different feel.
Yep.
So maybe there's going to be a little bit of a variety there.
Yeah. The price. Go ahead.
No. What's up?
So the price, how much is it going to cost? What is the lie? Again, it's 5G, so you have to factor in those components. But what makes this not a flagship phone? It has
What even is a flagship phone anymore?
Well, the flagship phone, for better or worse, is set by the processor that you put in, I guess.
Sure. It just feels like that's changing because the OnePlus Nord, for example, has a 765G, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't used it, but from watching people's takes on it, it feels like the 765, it doesn't feel like it's as black and white anymore about, like, it feels like the step down processor, like we're down, like the 765 feels like now the flagship processor in a sense. Like, it feels like that's now the flagship processor. And then the 800 series processor is now the, it's like we added a tier in here, you know, like it feels like there's now the overkill processor. And then the 765G is like now the flagship processor.
The problem with thinking of it being an addition, the 800 series being another tier, is fascinating. But I think the problem is you have Samsung who can both run and chew gum at the same time because they're Samsung and they're established. They can put in the highest end chip. And they clearly advertise their phone as a flagship. So again, like, there's so many people doing 765s this year, the LG Velvet comes to mind. But when you have Samsung still pushing out ultra phones and all of that, it kinda makes everybody look bad.
I mean, Samsung's current lineup starts with the S20 5G at $1,000, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of, even, I mean, Samsung's S20, their baseline phone is like in the category of overkill now.
Mm.
Kind of.
Kinda.
So yeah, I mean, it's just there's no, I just feel like these phones that are in the 650 range are like they're the new default phone, you know? Like I feel like the top end phone used to be the default phone, and now the 650 range weird like mid range phone is the default phone.
Is that how much the iPhone 11 is?
$699. That's okay. Right. Yeah, because the iPhone XR was $749, and then it dropped to $699 for the iPhone 11.
Yeah. So
it's weird to me that the average person would pay more than the iPhone 11 price for a phone in 2020.
Ooh.
You know, for most people, like, and it's like, I don't know, like we're not gonna go off on Apple tangent here, but the iPhone 11 Pro, like the Apple event was this week, right? And they announced the iPad Air 4, and it is 90% of the functionality of the iPad Pro at, you know, 70% of the price,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's the same thing with the iPhone 11, except even more. The iPhone 11 is like 90% of the iPhone 11 Pro at, well, yeah, probably about 70% of the price. Even less if you add storage and stuff, it starts to get stupid because you're like 128 gigs on the iPhone 11 is $749. It's only $50 extra to get to 128. Mm-hmm. If you want to go from 64 to 256 on the 11 Pro, you're going up from $1,000 to what is it, $1,200 or something? Like let's see what it is exactly, really briefly before we get off of this sidebar. The iPhone 11 Pro going up to, yeah, so you go from 1,000 to 1149. So the 256 gig 11 Pro is 1149 and the 128 gig 11 is 749. So that's like that's a 749. That's a $400 difference.
Hmm.
To get 10% more phone and 128 gigs more storage. That's effectively, like, that's crazy, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, that's like it, and it just goes to show, and I kind of tweeted about this week, that it goes to show how strong Apple's ability to convince their typical customers, their typical loyalists, to just buy whatever the most expensive thing is, because they're not worried about the iPhone 11 cannibalizing sales of the 11 Pro, because everyone's just going to buy the 11 Pro anyway because it's the best one, TM, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Google and no one else has the
ability
to do that, because if Google did that, if they launched the Pixel 5 at $699, and then there was like a Pixel 5 Pro that was like $1,000, but it was only 10% better.
Yeah,
no one's gonna buy the Pro one. Like, it's just gonna go. It's gonna sell like 5 units because Google just can't pull it off. But
I forgot for which generation Pixel, but you once made the argument that like pricing influences what people think as the premium phone. Like, as long as you're competing in the same category price-wise, people think your phone is automatically in the same ranks as whatever that iPhone price is.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of people. When the first Pixel was first announced, you know, the Pixel was entering an Android marketplace where the competition was to drive prices lower. It still is, but especially back then, this was, you know, earlier days for OnePlus. The value propositions from OnePlus especially was like, you could get, you know, when the first Pixel came out, you could get the equivalent OnePlus phone for hundreds of dollars cheaper for the exact same specs.
Mm-hmm.
But Google couldn't launch the Pixel at the OnePlus level, because Google needed to flex a little bit. They needed to make it appear, and they needed to convince people that the Pixel was directly comparable to the iPhone. And to be honest, they had genuine advantages that could be used to justify that. Anyways. I don't know if we really concluded anything in this conversation or extracted any valuable insights.
We speculated wildly.
We're speculating wildly on why this lineup is so weird, and we'll really only know why after these things launch and we get a better picture.
Do you think they will touch? I don't know. Do you think they'll even touch that in the event?
No, I'm not saying that they'll touch it in the event, but I think that we'll, after we see exactly how much things cost and where, how they're being, I mean, a big thing that's going to answer the question is how they're marketed. Is the Pixel 4a 5G going to be like the phone that Verizon is pushing on people in their all of their commercials? If it is, then that answers a little bit of a question. You know, that gives us a little bit of insight as to why the phone exists. Anyways, thanks for listening to us rant about pixels and try and piece together this puzzle, and hopefully we'll have better answers in the future. Let's talk a little bit about Chromecast. So we reported earlier this year about this dongle codenamed Sabrina. We had barely heard little whispers about it, and so we put a report about it, and basically the gist was, this is a dongle, the long, 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 long awaited dongle from Google that runs Android TV. For those that don't know, Google's never done a first-party Android TV dongle because they've let all of their partners put Android TV on all of their devices, pre-installed TVs, set-top boxes, cable companies, everyone. And dongles with Android TV have been an interesting kind of like, I guess the closest we've had were the recent, well, the developer kits, but then the NVIDIA Shield TV cube or sphere toilet paper roll thing.
In terms of like flagship dongles, that's a few, but there are so many Android TV dongles.
Yes. And this is Google's first party entrant in this space. And it kind of follows after, I mean, what else first party Android TV has Google done? They did the Nexus TV early days.
And that's it.
That's it. And then they just did Chromecasts, and Chromecasts up to now have been not running Android TV / Google TV. We can talk a little bit about that, but they've been running the Cast platform, which is built atop Chrome OS, right? Or is it Chromium at the core? And they've not been, you know, controllable with a remote. They're effectively just static screens that you can cast to, like a smart display or whatever. Everyone knows what a Chromecast is. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the definition of Chromecast is changing here, because now Chromecast is going to be running an operating system. It's going to be more comparable to the Rokus, comparable to the user experiences you're used to built into your TVs. You know, the media UX, the Xboxes, the set-top box, the Apple TV, the NVIDIA Shield. And it's going to come in a small package, and it's going to be $50. It's an interesting product. And I think a lot of enthusiasts have been like, I want this, because they want to use Android TV. The different TV makers are not super great at always having all the latest features and keeping things updated. I mean Ben's not on. If he were on, I would ask him what he thinks about all this, but, and he knows way more about it than I do, but this seems to me, at first glance, it seems to me like an enthusiast product. What do you think? Like, do you think this is gonna be, do you think it's gonna replace the Chromecast? Is the old Chromecast going away now?
I think the Chromecast has been stagnant for a few years with market share at around 10%, and they want more, and Google wants more control in the living room, whilst they give it away all to Amazon Fire TVs and Rokus. So I think if the old Chromecast has to go away for this to happen, I think Google is fully there, because it's stagnating to declining. So I think they, while people are still familiar with the Chromecast brand, I think Google is going to try to save it, to popularize it.
Interesting conversation there with the Chromecast, because let's go back 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. What made the Chromecast so successful in the first place?
It was so simple and so light and so cheap.
Yes. And almost everyone owned a dumb TV. Almost everyone had more than one dumb TVs in their house. And if you could go to the store and pay $30 for something that you can plug into the back of your TV and make it a smart TV, it was a no-brainer. And they sold like hotcakes, so to speak. Yes. And it makes sense. But now, is that a problem anymore? Do people have a bunch of dumb TVs laying around? I don't think so. I think that if they're Google's probably saturated the market. Anyone that had a dumb TV that they wanted to rectify and use as a smart TV either has a Chromecast plugged in or a Roku plugged in or an Apple TV plugged in or an Xbox plugged in or a Fire TV stick. You know, like the market is, or, you know, like everyone that needed one has got one.
So I think the unique sell of this Chromecast with Google TV is that we're in a time where everybody's watching so much TV. And I think there's a prime opportunity for Google to do it better, to one up the experience with, a nicer design, let's say. And I think they're really trying to leverage that this time around to make your TV better. And again, we have to see how Google TV works, or how simple it is for regular people to use. But yeah. I think this is the prime opportunity to launch something cheap, which means that there's no real overhead, there's no real commitment that people have to do. Get a $49 dongle and it's plug and play. They still have their old one. It's not a big commitment. And hopefully
that's I would really like to know why this product has not happened until now. Do you think it's a performance thing? Do you think that they couldn't get Android TV running on a small little thing? I mean, that doesn't make any sense because the Fire TV stick is the size of the Chromecast. It's not a performance thing.
Do you think it's like institutional, I don't know, offense against adding a remote, an institution, institutional bias? I feel
like the most likely answer is there was a business push to push Android TV as an operating system into as many TVs as many set-top boxes as possible. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was where the focus, like the operator side of Android TV was like the primary push. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. I think they thought that maybe they could just do that and that would be enough to take on Roku and Amazon Fire and stuff. But it's weird because it's like, why wouldn't you have a Google option? I mean, people have been buying Rokus and Amazon. So many people have asked me, like, should I buy a Chromecast or should I buy an Amazon Fire Stick or whatever? And I'm like, well, they're basically the same price. And one has a UI that you can control with a remote and the other one doesn't. I think you're going to want the remote. So, I mean, I love Chromecast. I love Cast Platform. I use it every day. But, like, it just doesn't make sense for most people to pick the product that's going to be harder for them to use, especially since casting media from phones can be a little bit janky and glitchy and stuff sometimes.
Maybe Google hoped that they could have won that philosophical battle of your phone being the remote versus their commitment to, like, you should use your phone to do everything. So maybe they finally overcame that to do
something. That's a good point. That would definitely be a Google thing to do. Would be to believe that the phone was going to win in the end, and then it didn't.
Which is a wild thought.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. The question is, I mean, actually, I think if you think about that, it's actually really interesting. We could probably talk about that for an hour about just the mechanics of what it's like to watch TV in the living room as a, you know, with family or with friends. It's like,
yes, with people is the key thing there.
Yeah, because if it's a purely solo activity, then I think the phone thing makes sense. I think that just controlling everything on your phone makes sense. But the ability to toss a remote around the room and let other people control the TV and, you know, just kind of like casually sit back and not have to, I don't know, like say someone comes over, right? Your friend comes over and you're sitting on the couch and you're gonna watch a show and you don't want to pick, you just want to let them. What do you have to do in the case of Chromecast? You have to take their phone, you have to sign into your own Wi-Fi network. You've got to make sure they have all the apps installed that they actually want. You know, like if you're wanting to watch a show on Netflix, you got to make sure they have Netflix installed on their phone. You know, or you got to let them use your phone, which already has the proper apps and already has the connection to the Wi-Fi. And so it's just like this whole hassle if you have more than one person in pretty much every scenario. If you just put a UI on there and you just make it controllable by a remote and it just connects directly to your Wi-Fi network, you know, it's like, it just erases all of those friction points. So, yeah, it just seems like Google should have been doing this whole time. They should have realized earlier that people were buying Rokus and not buying Chromecasts, and they probably should have pushed this out the door as quick as possible. And it's almost weird now that they're launching it. You know, it's like, this almost seems like a product that's like, well, where was this in 2016? And now you're launching it, and now everyone's already solved this problem. This problem, everyone already has a Roku or an Apple TV or an Xbox or a PlayStation 5 or a, you know, a Fire TV stick, or they have built-in Android TV on their TV. You know, like, this is such a solved problem in America.
Yeah, the question is, why is Google trying to reinvent this? And it's, if the reason's purely business, they're seeing Chromecast stagnate and Android TV stagnate, that's a bad answer. If they like, in the most ideal world of innovation, it should be that they came up with something super clever. They made something groundbreaking in terms of the user experience.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe there's an angle that they're going to go with at the event. Maybe there's an assistant thing here. Like, that's the only thing I can imagine. It's Google TV, right?
Yeah.
And with it being Google TV, that signals some things. That tells us this is going to be them trying to reinvent the TV experience to intermesh in with all the other Google Assistant stuff.
Heck, I'm surprised it's not Google Assistant TV.
Yeah. And I wonder, I don't know. The remote does have an assistant button on it. The remote has an assistant button and has a microphone on it. So
I'm very excited for this remote, as you were saying.
Maybe the Google TV experience, maybe the angle will be, maybe part of the Google TV experience is this is a smart display. So
the biggest smart display in the home.
Right. Like, you can put the cast platform smart display stuff, you can put it on any TV in your house, basically. Like, that might be the pitch. And that actually makes sense, because the Roku, I mean, honestly, it's dumb. Like not smart, you know, like Roku's UI and all that. Like, if Roku is like the Walmart of streaming sticks, Amazon Fire Stick is the Amazon of streaming sticks. And the Apple TV is like the Goldman Sachs, or not the Goldman Sachs, I was going to say the Neiman Marcus, not Goldman Sachs, the Neiman Marcus of streaming sticks. Uh-huh. And I feel like the Chromecast with Google TV is going to be like right there in the sweet spot, where it's like the super target of streaming sticks.
Or it's kind of like, wind up you, the Costco.
maybe. So I don't know. Yeah, that might be the angle. The angle might be, this is smarter than all the other streaming sticks. And if so, I think a lot of Roku users might upgrade to it. That might be, that sounds like, we didn't know the answer 5 minutes ago, but I think that might be the answer. The answer is, Google's going to say this is super smart because of Google Assistant, and all of the Roku people and all the Fire TV people, you should upgrade to it because the Google Assistant is so deeply integrated.
Yeah. People know what the system is. Yeah, Google Assistant TV. Basically.
Yeah. And there's also like, you know, controls all your Nest stuff. You know, I can easily see commercials of like, you know, someone sitting down, picking up the remote, saying hot word, show me the backyard or whatever. And it's like, pulls up like Nest Cam IQ or whatever, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, I can see the,
But the thing is, like, I'm going back, Google wishes that for the fewer using your phone. Like, the idea of like you picking up a remote to do that versus
not in line with the original vision.
Oh, that vision is such a mismatch. But again, it seems like they're going for the moment right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of Nest, I guess we can move on. By the way, Chromecast Google TV, it looks like, based on retailer leaks that Artem over at Android Police found, summer melon, pink, rock candy, gray, and summer blue. So it looks like three colors. $50.
We need to talk about this name for 2 minutes.
Why?
Yeah. Google Chromecast.
Google Chromecast with Google TV.
I mean, if they were smart, there'd be Nest Chromecast with Google TV to avoid the repetition, but this is insane.
Maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be Nest Chromecast with Google TV. They're just not going to say the Nest. I don't know. It seems like they had to choose between embracing the new branding, which would have been unfamiliar, or embracing the Chromecast, which is a culturally popular name that probably all the user studies or consumer studies probably showed people know. And they probably were forced to pick the one that's not as cohesive with the rest of this of the image, because people actually know
they also picked both. They literally picked both things, the brand new product and the very old product, and they put them side by side. It's
the Google TV being the new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. New. The Google TV is also not. Yeah, that's a whole thing.
Maybe they were so institutionally hurt by their crazy Google TV boxes that came with keyboards and remotes. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, compared to that, this is toned down and simplified.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Nest Audio finally. The Google Home app just revealed, we didn't know the name until, you know, this week. Google Home app revealed that the Nest Audio is the name for the speaker. Detailed a few other little things that are not really that exciting. We don't really know the pricing. I would assume somewhere in the realm of the OG Google Home, so more or less expensive than the, well, maybe it's going to be around the same price as the probably around the same price as the Nest Hub, because the Nest Hub is an inferior product in terms of sound performance, but it's a superior product in terms of, I guess, features and functionality. So I would guess that maybe it'll be side by side with the Nest Hub, because it's a way better speaker than the Nest Hub, that's for sure.
I don't know. I feel like we have too many speakers these days. Like, to me, like, this after the Nest Audio, that's the last speaker for like who knows how many years.
5 years, we're done.
Yeah, they've done everything.
Like, yeah. Fair.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it looks like a speaker bookshelf. It looks like modern bookshelf speakers, I put it that way.
Yeah. It's very basic. There's almost nothing to talk about here. We can almost just end the show right there, because it is what it is. You've seen it. Google showed it off. It's probably going to be $100 ish. And it looks like it plays audio. I mean, I reported in my original report about it. The my source originally described it to me as half of a Google Home Max. And it seems like you can pretty easily pair two of them up, just like you can Google Home Maxes. And yeah. It is what it is. It looks nice.
Yeah, it looks fine. It's
probably going to sound good.
Hopefully. I think that's like definitely an interesting sell. Like, once you get, I don't know, the theory is that once you get one speaker in your home, you'll want to upgrade. I don't know. Can you teach people to be audiophiles, or do they have to innately want to seek it out?
You know, that's an interesting thing, actually. We can end the show on this note. I think I actually have become a little bit of an audiophile ever since I got a Home Max. I didn't realize until I got the Home Max and put it in my living room how bad all my speakers sounded, you know. Like, even my TV soundbar sounds worse than my Home Max. I can't handle listening to anything out of the Nest Hub now. The cheap Nest Hub, the like
horrible. Absolutely.
I cannot listen to anything on that, because it just sounds like a smartphone almost. It's pretty awful. And the original Google Home sounds okay, which is what I have, one of those. The Lenovo Smart Display sounds pretty good. I have one of those in my kitchen now. I had to replace the Nest Hub with it because the Nest Hub speaker is so poor. But having that Home Max in my living room, I almost want to put a Home Max in all my rooms now, because it just sounds so good. Might be the best sounding speaker I own, I think.
Yeah, so. I cannot wait for that to be fire sailed everywhere. Oof.
It already is. I've already seen it on sale for like $199 in a couple places.
Yeah, it's still one.
That's not enough of a fire sale yet.
No, $149.
You gotta wait until they're just like sitting in a warehouse somewhere, and you can go pay cash $50 for them or something.
Man, I would line up the hallways with them.
Yeah. That reminds me of my school district growing up. They would recycle all their old Apple computers and stuff every once in a while. After like 5 years, they would hold like a huge event where they would just let people come in their big warehouse and just sell old Apple products for like dirt cheap.
Nice.
Be nice if that happened with some old Google stuff. I'd pick up like 10 Home Maxes. I'd probably pick up like 5 Pixel books. because sidebar, there's not been a Google laptop that's lived up to the Pixelbook yet. I'm really hoping we see a Pixelbook 2 this year, or by this year, I mean 12 months from now. Mm-hmm. I don't know, wild card. Let's end the show on that note, actually. What do you think? Anything you expect we might see that could be a little bit of a surprise at the event?
So there's the an FCC registration for a new Nest thermostat, which might or might not include some kind of Siri-based gestures. But I don't think it's... If Nest is having another event, I think it's later. I don't know, because it should be this event, but there's nothing pointing to it coming immediately, so...
Yeah, there was a time when Nest was separate to Google, and so Nest held all of its... They had their entire separate PR, and they had their entirely separate marketing and everything.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. So this would be the Nest event of the year. It is. Yeah. I mean, the Nest Audio, and this is the Nest event. It's weird to say that.
It would be amazing if they kept it under wraps. What do you think? If they successfully...
That'd be awesome. I mean, I'm hoping that to happen. I am as pro Google secrets as you can be, because I would love...
Like a surprise.
Yeah, there's something fun about a surprise, and we haven't had one from Google in quite some time. Trying to think of what the last true Google surprise was.
Pixel Buds, right?
No, we knew about that pre-launch pretty well. Well, Pixel Buds last year did not... There was no asset or imagery leaks. We just knew about them, and we just knew they existed, and we knew maybe what they were.
Maybe they could pull another one. It'll 6 months or whatever.
That's probably why the Pixel Buds stayed under wraps for the most part, because they weren't done yet. They weren't done. That's what Google should do. Hey, all the tech companies should just do this. Just announce everything that you're going to announce in like 3 years, and you'll never have another leak ever again.
Man, somebody should be bold enough to do that.
That'd be really interesting take, like announcing things that are 2 years out, but with the disclaimer that everything's tentative, kind of like Apple did with AirPower.
In the chat, Austin Murphy said Google Clips.
I think that ended up being...
Oh, I remember that story.
That ended up being grafted into Google Photos, and that's... Yeah.
That's fair.
I think Clips is done. I think that was an experiment that was worth the investment.
So I mean, that's the last slide.
Oh, surprise. Yeah. Yes. Clips. Yes. We didn't know about Clips, did we?
Because nobody knew about Clips. Nobody knows about Clips.
Still, nobody knows about... I think Clips still hasn't leaked, actually.
That did not fire. I would have bought one because I'm a completionist, but never got to a fire sale. So
yeah,
they have to be somewhere, right? They must exist in the warehouse somewhere.
There's got to be. There's a warehouse of Google Clips sitting somewhere. Oh man, that would be fun. That'd be a fun review. Be fun review Clips in 2020. Maybe we'll do that. Thanks for the idea, Austin. On that note, we'll wrap the show there. I think we're kind of getting off the rails a little bit. We'll maybe have a show next week. I think we'll have to, because it's going to be the last show before the event. Or maybe we'll not do one next week, and we'll just do a live stream during the event. Something fun, interesting. We got to switch things up, make this a little bit more interesting next week.
It's the day after. It's on Wednesday. We'll have a stream on Thursday. We'll see.
We'll figure something out. Thanks for tuning in to Alphabet Scoop. We're here every week, whether it be me and Abner, or Abner and Ben and Kyle and whoever. We record this podcast on Wednesdays, and they typically go up on podcasting platforms the next day, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podcast, Google Podcasts, Google Play. I really need to remove that one from the script. And you can also listen directly over at 95google.com at 95google.com/guide/alphabet-scoop. You can also follow us on Twitter at Twitter/ABC Scoop. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in as always, and we'll see you next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.